You see, this region is linked politically and geographically with the Middle East. And when the American troops arrived in Saudi Arabia in 1990, the problems were started in this whole region. And after a few years, the American troops arrived in Afghanistan after 9/11. They captured Afghanistan in December 2001. And after that, the whole region was destabilized. So we have seen that wherever the American troops, they go, so their arrival creates a lot of problems and it generates instability. So now the Americans have gone back from Afghanistan, but they are still present around South Asia. Like they still have some military bases in the Middle East, and they are also causing a lot of problems in Syria and Iraq and Palestine. So I think that they should leave back this whole region, and that is the only solution.
I know Pakistan itself is a victim of terrorism, and they have paid a high price fighting terrorism as well. And as you mentioned, things in our region, things in the South Asian region is highly connected with the Middle East, with the West Asian, you know, dynamics going on there. And one of them is the issue of terrorism and, you know, these, you know, hardliner ideologies that also Pakistan is trying to confront them. And specifically speaking, General Qasem Soleimani had an important role in fighting against terrorism. How do you find that? How did the role that General Soleimani played in fighting against terrorism?
Yes, Shahid General Qasem Soleimani was actually leading a fight against the ISIS, the Daesh. And the other, the Iraqi general, Abu Mehdi al-Mandas, who was also martyred with him in January 2020, he was also a part of that resistance against the ISIS. In fact, both these generals, they played a very important role in the defeat of ISIS in Iraq. And now we have witnessed the presence of ISIS not only in Afghanistan but also in Pakistan. So ISIS is a threat for the stability of the whole region. And General Qasem Soleimani was fighting against this menace. So as far as my personal opinion is concerned, if General Qasem Soleimani was fighting against ISIS, I think he was fighting for the stability of the whole region.
We will carry on our interview with Mr. Hamid Mir after a part. Let's see what has Ali Reza to say about the echoes of the martyrdom of Shahid Soleimani in the subcontinent region. Stay with us.
If America was looking to score a win by assassinating Iran's General Qasem Soleimani, it's hard to see how. Because what might have just been a name to many turned into a household action hero character. Subcontinental Muslims had often heard his name, but his operations were concentrated in West Asia or the Middle East. And so in the subcontinent, he didn't get the media coverage Arab language press awarded him. But after he was martyred, his name became a constant with journalists and politicians. Shia Muslims of the subcontinent, of course, were perfectly familiar with him, even before. Shiism is the majority sect of Iran. Soleimani's assassination via a U.S. drone strike at Baghdad International Airport stirred the atmosphere. Here's how it went in India and Pakistan. In Pakistan, at the same time as the news broke, an old picture was circulated on social media, a picture of the martyred general shaking hands with Mirza Aslam Beg, former Pakistan Chief of Army Staff in 1989. Some Pakistani media outlets followed the Western line, however, accusing the general of religious conflict. But shortly after such reaction, Khawaja Asif MP called on the National Assembly of Pakistan to take a stance to the American act of terror. In condemning the act, he portrayed a lame Pakistani foreign policy, saying that Pakistan's foreign policy is in need of polio drops. It cannot stand on its own two feet. It is friends with both the Arabs and Iran. But where does it stand? Pakistan should take a bold stand in the current situation and should not be blackmailed by any other country. On January the 12th, 2020, Mirza Aslam Beg acted as keynote speaker at a demonstration of thousands in Islamabad in protest to the Soleimani assassination. He said that when Iran told America it would give it a hard lesson, he warned the Americans to beware, as both Iran's cyber tech and artificial intelligence is superior to that of America and its drone and missile capabilities. Indian reaction can be classed as three. The indifference tone, which referred to the act as a killing of the general, a killing that was cause for worry globally and especially to India. The Indian Ministry of External Affairs did refer to Soleimani as a senior Iranian leader. The second grouping involves those referring to that senior Iranian leader as India's friend, who believe India should adopt a firmer stance towards his assassination. The last grouping comprised those expressing concerns over global security. They called the general an affront to Indian security and national interest. Their only reason was a 2012 attack on the Israeli ambassador's car in Delhi, when in fact there was never any evidence against Iran. They saw no reason for India siding with Iran against America, as the cost would be too high. And also because when it came to Afghanistan and the Chabahar issue, Iran didn't assign its Chabahar port to India. They were also displeased about Iran's criticism of Indian policy towards its Muslim and scrapping Kashmir's autonomy. Also, they were concerned Iran's Islamic revolution thinking could damage Indian security and national interest. But apart from authorities of the like, India's Muslims expressed solidarity with Iran and condemned America for its crime. In Indian-ruled Kashmir, different cities were a scene of demonstrations. Kargil, for one, people of Kargil burst into protest in the early hours after Soleimani's martyring. The protest, which was called for by all religious groups and sects, was followed by days of mourning. Shias of that region mourned in their tradition of marching as they beat their chests. Kashmir Valley Shias and Muslims at large also poured out into the streets on the same day the general was martyred in angry disgust at the U.S. Press TV covered all the many ceremonies held in honor of Qasem Soleimani.
On the second martyrdom anniversary of Shahid General Qasem Soleimani, I'm hosting Mr. Hamid Mir, prominent Pakistani analyst and journalist from Islamabad. Mr. Mir, after the martyrdom of Shahid Soleimani, there were several Pakistani figures who showed their anger against this criminal act of USA. And meanwhile, there were some dynamics as well. Some Pakistani politicians, criticize unclear foreign policy of Pakistan towards such events, specifically speaking towards the United States of America. What do you think about that? And what do you think that the stand of Pakistani government, because the stand of the Pakistani people is very clear.
Yeah, you see, I am not the spokesperson of the government of Pakistan.
Of course.
I will only share my personal point of view as a journalist, as an analyst, as a security expert with you. And you see that General Qasem Soleimani and the Iraqi General Abu Mahdi al-Mandas, both of them were targeted through the drone attack. And we, the Pakistanis, have seen drone attacks in our part of the world by the U.S. Forces many times. And on many occasions, the U.S. drone attacks killed innocent civilians, innocent children, and innocent women. And whenever they killed innocent children and innocent women, they claimed that they have killed terrorists. So that's why when General Qasem Soleimani and his fellow Iraqi general were attacked in January 2020, so the majority of the Pakistanis, they never approved that attack. And as far as my personal view is concerned, I think that that attack was a clear violation of the international law. If we go through the United Nations Charter, the UN Charter, that attack was the clear violation of the Article 51 of the UN Charter, because the US government never get approval from the United Nations Security Council. Yes, they can attack through drones on a foreign country if they think that their own country was under threat, but General Qasem Soleimani was not planning any attack on United States. So, first of all, that attack was the violation of the UN Charter. Secondly, this attack in which General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mehdi al-Mehandas both were martyred, that attack was the violation of the American law, the US law, because there is a ban on the assassination in any foreign country by the American security agencies. The ban was imposed in 1976 by President Ford. But they can only organize that kind of attack by getting approval from the US Congress. So President Trump, he never got any permission from the US Congress. So I think that this attack was the violation of the UN Charter. This attack was the violation of the United States law. And that's why the Iranian government and the Iraqi government, they issued arrest warrants of the former American President Donald Trump. So I think that any country which is violating the international law, we should condemn that. And majority of the Pakistanis, they view that attack in January 2020 in the same perspective.
Yeah, one of the main issues that was followed by Sheikh General Qasem Soleimani was the issue of Palestine, a common issue for all the Muslim Ummah. You should know the ongoing process of normalization of ties with the Zionist regime among some Arab and Muslim countries. My question is about Pakistan. Pakistan, a country established based on Islam and democracy, Islamic Republic of Pakistan. How do you analyze and what do you think and what is the status and the stand of Pakistan towards this ongoing process of normalization of ties with the Zionist regime?
This is a very important question. Wherever I go, any part of the world, the people ask me questions, especially in Europe and America. They ask questions that if Jordan can establish diplomatic relations with Israel, if Egypt can establish diplomatic relations with Israel, now recently UAE is also included in those Muslim countries which have established diplomatic relations with Israel. So they say, why Pakistan is reluctant? Turkey is also one of those Muslim countries which have established friendly relations with Israel. So why Pakistan is reluctant? You see, the majority of the people outside Pakistan are not aware that the Pakistan resolution was adopted on 23rd of March 1940. Pakistan was established in 1947, but the Pakistan resolution was adopted in 1940 in Lahore, a very big city of Pakistan. In that resolution, there were 4 points. The first point was that the Muslims of the subcontinent will create a separate homeland, which was created after 7 years of that resolution. And the second point of that resolution was that the Muslims of subcontinent will always support the Muslims of Palestine. And for many years, the founding party of the party which was leading the freedom struggle, its name was All India Muslim League. That All India Muslim League was observing Palestine Day every year. And the founder of Pakistan, Qaid Azam Muhammad Ali Jinnah, after the creation of Pakistan, he was approached by the Israelis, by the Americans, that we want to establish diplomatic relations with you. But Qaid Azam Muhammad Ali Jinnah, he refused. He refused to President Truman, and he said, he criticized President Truman. He was the president of America, and he said that unless the Arab Muslims of Palestine are not free, we will not establish any diplomatic relations. So this is the policy of the founder of Pakistan, Qaid Azam Muhammad Ali Jinnah, that we are still following. That is the reason that every government in Pakistan, whether it is the government of Zulfikar Ali Bhutto or Benazir Bhutto or Nawaz Sharif or Imran Khan, so no government in Pakistan can go against the policy set by the founder of Pakistan, Muhammad Ali Jinnah. Yes, some military dictators like Pervez Musharraf, they tried to establish diplomatic relations with Israel secretly. But you can see now that Pervez Musharraf is not living in Pakistan. He is living in exile.
Yes.
So the people of Pakistan, they will not accept any policy which will harm the interest of the Palestinian people.
Thank you so much, Mr. Hamid Mir from Islamabad, Pakistan. Thank you for being with us. Venturi with Hamid Mir, the prominent Pakistani author and journalist. Stay with us for the next part of The Shaheed, another part that's going to talk about the dimension of the personal life of Shaheed General Soleimani and how he was sensitive about financial issues.
Soleimani was a man of unwavering morals, and so trustworthiness with the people's treasury and rights was a top priority for him. Fatima, one of his daughters, remembers her early childhood when her father took her along to his office some days when he was in Tehran. His meetings went on longer at times, and to busy herself, Fatima would go to the fridge for toffees, fruit juice, or just water. After the meeting, her father would quickly come out with paper and pen to make note of what she'd consumed. On their way out, he'd give the list to someone to take to the accountancy department. He'd say, "This is what my daughter consumed. Let them know to charge me for it or deduct it from my pay." Sohrab Soleimani, the general's brother, says, "When on occasion we came to IRGC venues, he paid for all water and electricity costs to do with the family, right after. It may be hard to believe, but this is exactly how he treated national funds. Protecting the funds and rights of the people, rather than seeing them as an opportunity, kept him clean of using them for personal gain. Moreover, over tens of years of honest service, he continually went on domestic and foreign missions. But he didn't receive a cent as bonus for going on mission, although it was his religious and legal right to take it." A friend of his relates, "One day after a morning ceremony, close to the noon call for prayer, he wanted to go from Qanat Malik village to Kerman. Haj Qasim was to fly to Tehran at 3:40 p.m. and from there to Syria at night. He had also promised Ali Shafi'i's mother to visit her before the flight. Just as we were about to leave, a family turned up, wanting to discuss their problem with Haji. We insisted to Haji time was short, but he sat down for the family to write down their problem, and he initialed the document for the relevant person in charge to take it more seriously. We eventually reached Kerman. I said, 'Haji, you'll miss the flight if you go to see the martyr's mother. Just call and ask how she is.' He said, 'No, I promised.' So we went to her, and Haji himself went to the kitchen, brewed tea, and came with fruit to sit with the mother and wait on her. I said, 'Haji, you won't make it. Allow me to call and postpone the flight by 15 minutes. He said, "How many people do you think will be on that flight?" I said, 200 to 300. He said, "How many more flights will this plane make by the end of the night?" I said, 3 to 4 flights. He said, "So you want me to be indebted to at least 1,000 people?" That day, Haj Qasim missed the flight, but he was indebted to no one. The general's sensitivity in the matter of rights was so high that even unintentionally flashing your highlights into another driver's eyes was something to apologize for. And it didn't matter how preoccupied with other critical matters he might have been. Examples are many, but time is short.
The events of subcontinent is not detached and separated from what's going on in Middle East. In both cases and in both regions, one destabilizing factor is the presence of alien forces of United States of America. Thank you for joining. Goodbye. Wassalam.
morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
My name is Sheikh Zayed Al Salami.
A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. So when we were talking about mediating in the good sense between people who are at dispute with each other, or mediating between two people wanting to get married, or finding a spouse for a brother, finding a spouse for a sister, and we said that is one of the greatest forms of ibadah, and also something that will very positively contribute to a better society. At the same time, there's something that we should always remember as well, and that is that we should never be a part of mediating for the purpose of evil, for the purpose of bad, for the purpose of wrong, for the purpose of haram. And I think that's something that should be mentioned, in the sense of we should never be involved in anything that would lead to something bad or evil or haram. So what we're talking about is Nasrul Mazlum, and that's exactly why in a long hadith, Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq salamullahi alayhi, he describes the qualities of a believer, and then he says وَيَنْصُرُ Mazlum, and a believer is someone who supports and assists the oppressed. وَيَرْحَمُ الْمِسْكِينَ, and they have mercy on the poor, on the destitute. And then he says, and a believer, he undergoes difficulties, نَفْسُهُ مِنْهُ فِي عَنَائٍ, which means that, you know, a believer has hardships. وَالنَّاسُ مِنْهُ فِي رَاحَةٍ, that people are comfortable, people don't have any problems from him. You know, unfortunately, sometimes you see that someone who is very stressed, or someone who is anxious, or someone who has problems, you know, they bring their hardships out verbally by, you know, letting it out on other people. For example, you know, if you have a problem with, you know, this or that, you know, why are you throwing it onto me, or why are you letting it out onto me? You know, this hadith says, وَالنَّاسُ مِنْهُ فِي رَاحَةٍ, that people are free of any problems coming from this individual. Important point here, from this particular hadith from Imam Sadiq salamullahi alayhi, is that you are someone who helps and assists and supports an oppressed person. Another hadith from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi, he says, مَنْ أَخَذَ لِلْمَظْلُومِ مِنَ الظَّالِمِ كَانَ مَعِي فِي الْجَنَّةِ مُصَاحِبًا. If you were to take the rights of the oppressed from the oppressor, you will be with Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi in heaven as a companion. So you will be among the companions of the Holy Prophet in heaven. You will be in the proximity, in the vicinity of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi in heaven. مَنْ أَخَذَ لِلْمَظْلُومِ مِنَ الظَّالِمِ كَانَ مَعِي فِي الْجَنَّةِ مُصَاحِبًا. This is exactly shows how important it is for us to be a voice for the oppressed, for us to support the oppressed, and in any way never ever mediate in contributing to someone being wronged, or the wrong being performed.
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book Mafatih Al Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاکر جنان است چه فرون دماغ و صاحب داره فرون روان
One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اینه که فرون درخکاری رو کم صاحب داره دعا هم داره صبا هم داره
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره
امام has mentioned both of these subjects. The very imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree.
محیط زیست نگه سالم داره این دقل ثواب داره
There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
وقتی میخوای کشاورزی کنی یه قدر گندم بگیر رو به قبله بیست این دعا رو بخون این هم همون امام گفته دیگه
When growing wheat take some in your hand and say these prayers These are what the very imam has mentioned
تو نظام اسلامی این جلد دوم جاش خالی
We lack this second volume in Islamic world
Similar to the other topics where we have spoken about social justice, social awareness, if we don't have this element of practice in our lives, then there is no such thing as social justice or social awareness. And that is to be individually and collectively responsible for the betterment of our society. And that can only be done by us encouraging good to be performed and by blocking and stopping and deterring bad to be practiced. And this is what we call in Islam, al-amr bil-ma'roof wal-nahi anil munkar. Enjoining the good, al-ma'roof means that which your aql, that which your religion encourages you or defines as being good, al-ma'roof. Al-Nahi an al-Munkar, that you prohibit, that you ban, that you forbid, that you discourage the bad to be performed. Al-Nahi an al-Munkar. Now, someone might think that the first thing that comes to my mind when I hear the word Al-Amr bil-Ma'roof, Wal-Nahi an al-Munkar, besides it being one of the furu' al-Din, besides it being a fundamental in our Sharia as Muslims, the first thing that comes to my mind is that verbal kind of censuring of people. Hey, it's haram for you to do this, don't do that, don't do this, get up and pray. That's the kind of image that comes to most people's minds when the topic of Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahi an al Munkar is spoken about, or especially in the area of like hijab or these kind of other issues, you know, social issues, if I could say. But there's a wider understanding of al-amr bil ma'ruf wa nahi an al-munkar. What I am doing right now is a form of amr bil ma'ruf wa nahi an al-munkar. What you do by attending the masjid is a form of amr bil ma'ruf wa nahi an al-munkar. What you do by encouraging someone, you know, to say something nice, for example, not by telling them, but by you acting in that particular way, is a form of Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahi an al Munkar. And by the way, it's not only Islam that has established this fundamental social quality. You know, we can see from based on the verses that I'll be sharing with you that it's a part of other religions as well. You know, which religion would not encourage you to encourage others to do good? Which religion would not encourage you to discourage other people from doing bad and wrong? Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen Wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin
Driving past Walking fast To the field of dreams Hear the children scream
There was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
With the firm determination shown by the lovers of freedom and justice, the day may soon dawn when the killers of Soleimani and Al-Mohandes receive their due punishment, however tight the security ring around them, says Kayhan International staff writer in an article published under the heading "Justice Demands Elimination of Soleimani's Killers." Stay tuned for more. Justice loses its very concept if sadistic killers who shamelessly brag about the terrorism they have committed, especially in shedding the blood of those striving for peace, progress, humanitarian values and freedom from hegemonic yoke, are left unpunished for whatever reason, including undue apprehension of the power, position and protection the criminals might enjoy. In other words, in order to deter repetition of rampant acts of terrorism, the murderers, along with their accomplices, ought to be brought to justice and meted out the punishment they deserve as a warning to all would-be criminals of the consequences of their crimes against humanity. This was the gist of the speeches that echoed on January 3rd from the snow-covered heights of Himalayas in Kashmir to the sun-scorched coast of Red Sea and all the way to the Mediterranean, as scholars, journalists, media personnel, politicians, freedom fighters, and religious leaders joined the masses in commemorating the second anniversary of the martyrdom of two of the topmost icons of the struggle against international terrorism. They did not mince words when they demanded that the bloodthirsty rogue Donald Trump, who, as the then president of the U.S. regime, had connived with his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, and the Zionist regime's notorious crime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, to assassinate Iran's General Qasem Soleimani and Iraq's Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes, be convicted by the U.N. and given capital punishment. Iranian President Dr. Seyed Ebrahim Raisi, in his address to a huge gathering at Tehran's sprawling Imam Khomeini Musalla, rightly remarked that if Trump, the prime aggressor, murderer, and criminal in the heinous crime of assassination of General Soleimani, is not put in the criminal dock, along with Pompeo, for trial in a fair mechanism of justice and not given the maximum punishment, the Islamic Ummah will undoubtedly wreak vengeance. At the same time, in New York, Iran's permanent ambassador to the UN, Majid Takht-Ravanchi, reminding the world body of its investigative report in 2020 that castigated as unlawful the U.S. assassination of Soleimani al-Mohandes, their eight colleagues, in the terrorist attack on Baghdad International Airport said, "Given the dire implications of this terrorist act on international peace and security, the Security Council must live up to its charter-based responsibilities and hold the United States and the Israeli regime to account for planning, supporting, and committing the terrorist act. Will the UN live up to its responsibilities and take necessary action against Trump and his criminal clique? The answer is in the negative, because of the influence of the US wills over the UN. But this will not be an impediment for those activists for justice determined to penetrate the security ring around the terrorists to mete out revolutionary justice to them." This was hinted by the bereaved daughters of the two prominent martyrs, whose tears have not run dry and are resolved that the prime perpetrators of terrorism should be eliminated along with their accomplices. Zainab Soleimani, during her vigil at Baghdad Airport on Sunday night, January 2nd, the eve of the martyrdom anniversary of the two topmost anti-terror commanders, reminded the Iraqi people of the love of her father for them from the depth of his heart and how he had saved them from the US and the Takfiri terrorists. She said the Iranian and Iraqi people should work hand in hand for avenging the innocent blood of the martyrs. Manar al-Muhandis, in her presence at the grave of her father in the vast Wadi al-Salam cemetery in Najaf amidst a huge gathering, said Abu Mahdi devoted his life to the liberation of the Iraqi people. "And tonight, we, the Iraqi and Iranian people, vow to move closer, hand in hand, and step by step, to the horizon of exacting harsh revenge on enemies whose hands are stained with their blood." She added, "We will exact vengeance on the rulers of Saudi Arabia as well, who think that they can revive the rule of the oppressive Umayyad regime with their money. We will indeed take revenge for every drop of blood that was shed unjustly in Iraq, Syria, and Yemen." With such a firm determination shown by the lovers of freedom and justice, the day may soon dawn when the killers of Soleimani and al-Muhandis receive their due punishment, however tight the security ring around them.
Sheikh Mohammed Hakim Samadi did this favor to Muslims, not only Shias but also Muslims in Norway, to have a calendar through which they be able to perform their, you know, Islamic rituals.
For teaching these stuff, the teacher has to master fiqh usul to some considerable level of hawza or seminary school. Correct. So he was really in such position to teach this stuff and lessons over there in Norway, and this is well known among most of the people over there.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is the teacher. I'm Atta, the host of this program. The teacher is about the life and the works of the most outstanding Muslim, especially Shiite dignitaries and scholars, jurisprudents, thinkers, and philosophers all across the nation of Islam. And for this episode, I have two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Ziyaniya. Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Ziyaniya, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
So today we want to talk about an outstanding figure originally from the country Afghanistan, who spent most of his life in preaching Islam, and especially the Shiite Islam, in their international scenes and international scopes. He is no one but Muhammad Hakim Samadi. Let's first have a look at his biography and early life, Sheikh Ziyaniya. What information do we have about Sheikh Muhammad Hakim Samadi?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Sheikh Muhammad Hakim Samadi was born in Afghanistan in 1318 in lunar calendar, that is 1940 or 1939. He started his studies in Afghanistan, his elementary studies in Islamic teachings. And, you know, he was born in Ghazni province.
That's right.
And so he was from a Shia family. They were a noble family, and his father was a doctor. And they were activists, you know, in social and, you know, cultural atmosphere of Afghanistan community at that time.
That's right.
Even, for example, his father was a brave man, mm-hmm. and in some, you know, occasions that took place at that time, his father showed some, you know, bravery from himself and defended the land of Afghanistan.
That's right.
Because, you know, he wanted to continue, I mean, Sheikh Muhammad Hakim Samadi wanted to continue his studies in higher courses, so he moved to Iran.
Yes.
And in Iran, he settled in Qom and studied the higher degrees of jurisprudence and its principles, and also some other stuff that was, for example, Arabic, you know, literature, and also some philosophical issues. So he spent 20 years participating in the course of Ayatollah Vahid Khorasani's fiqh courses, I mean jurisprudence courses, that is the that at that time was, and even now,
yes.
is one of the most you know, prominent and notable and valuable courses in the
yes.
Islamic Seminary of Qom. And even Sheikh Muhammad Hakim Samadi wrote the notes of the course of Ayatollah Vahid Khorasani
yes.
in a book that was published by his name.
Okay.
And the rest of his life, he dedicated his life in preaching of Islam.
Lamahat fil Usul.
Yes.
Is the title of the Taghrirat of Sheikh Muhammad Hakim Samadi for Ayatollah Vahid Khorasani's courses. And this, you know, transcribing the speeches and the lectures of the outstanding ulama was done by most of the famous or notable students of the ulama over there, and then changed into the book in order to for the students to benefit. Okay. These are about the early life and the studying of Muhammad Hakim Samadi, but when we look at his life, it is, we can say, divided into two parts. One of them was the learning in Iran, Iraq, and we can say Afghanistan. The other part is his international preaching in the Western world, which made him very much famous and a source of benefit and information for the foreign students, especially the Shiite ones, in the Western world. Sheikh Mahdavi, give us some details about this part of the life of Muhammad Hakim Samadi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. If we wanted to talk about this point of, or this aspect of his life, it's good to say that this aspect of his life started or initiated by the invitation of Shia community in Germany. Actually, a Shia community, Afghan Shia community in Germany, invited him to be among them and start preaching Islam among them, since they are minority. Even among Muslim communities over there, Afghans are one of the minorities,
yes.
because we have a big community for Indians, Pakistanis. Afghans among them could be considered as one of the minor ones. So he was invited to be among them, and after that, from Germany, he moved to Norway and stayed there till the end of his life. In Norway, if we wanted to elaborate on his activity over there, we have to say in Oslo, which is the capital of Norway, we have different communities, although we have communities here and there from the north of Norway. Upon the south of Norway, we have different Afghan communities residing over there, but most of them are gathering in Oslo. Besides them, we have Pakistanis, Indians, and there is a very famous mosque over there, which is known as At-Tawheed Mosque, which is a center for the heart, you may say, the heart of Shia community in Scandinavian countries.
Okay.
So one of the very important activities that he is well known for is teaching high-level lessons of Hausa. So among those communities, no matter they're coming from Lebanese communities, Iraqi communities, Pakistani communities, there were some of the students of Hausa. So they wanted to develop their studying. So they were in need of a teacher who teach them Makasib or Rasa'il. These lessons are not going to be easily taught.
Yes.
So for teaching these stuff, the teacher has to master Fiqh Usul to some considerable level of Hausa or
yes.
seminary school.
Okay.
So he was really in such position to teach this stuff and lessons over there in Norway, and this is well known among most of the people over there.
That's right.
I mean, those who are involved with the seminary or scholarly environment.
That's all right.
Besides this, he is regarded as the axis of unity among these communities, because unfortunately it's a bit difficult for different communities to gather around one table, even though they are living in a foreign country, which
yes.
is far from their homeland.
Yes.
So if somebody is coming from Indian community, another one is coming from Pakistani community, and another one is coming from African community and Iranian community, they are in need of someone who can say, or who could be called as a spiritual father.
Mm-hmm.
So Sheikh Muhammad Hakim Samadi is regarded as one of those spiritual fathers for this community, I mean Shia community in general, in Norway, besides Sayyid Shamshad, who is living right now, and
oh.
he is actually playing a key role over there.
Okay.
But he is actually regarded as the one of the axes of unity among Shia community over there.
That's all right. And this is really, I think, for an international figure, it's really difficult to live in a country with the language you are unfamiliar, okay, with the cultural atmosphere over there, and then all of a sudden you want to start a kind of a scholarly movement, a kind of color-changing movement over there. It would be really difficult, but Muhammad Hakim Samadi, I think, was successful in Norway. And, you know, say one of the tasks Sheikh Ziyaniyah that he did in Norway was about the Shari'i calendar, which exists over there. And this is usually the thing that most of the international figures in the foreign countries do. Explain a little bit about this for us. What is it exactly? I mean, what do you mean when we say that an alim is concerned with this Shari'i, or it's better to say law-based or Islamic law-based, you know, calendar
yes.
over there?
You know, in Islamic Sharia, we have some injunctions and rituals that these rituals are dependent on the proper moments. For example, we have the month of Ramadan.
Yes.
Or we have the month of Dhul-Hajjah, that is the time for performing Hajj. Or some other occasions in which Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam are born or are martyred. So these events are important for Muslims, because they are in need of performing their rituals, so they should discern which time the month of Ramadan starts, which time the month of Ramadan ends, what is the time of Subh prayer or Fajr prayer,
yes.
what is the time of Dhuhr prayer or Noon prayer. So each prayer time also is important. So here, because these, you know, concepts are religious concepts,
yes.
so they must be defined by a mujtahid or by a person who is prominent in religion,
yes.
at least. So a normal person, it is very hard for him to, you know, deduce the result for such, you know, issues.
Yes.
So that's why in this situation people always refer to a person, to a figure who is prominent regarding Islamic studies. And that's why Sheikh Muhammad Hakim Samadi did this favor to Muslims, not only Shias but also Muslims in Norway, to have a calendar through which they be able to perform their, you know, Islamic rituals. Of course, this is not the only action, this is not the only favor that he had done to Muslim community over there. He was a figure that was participating in the World Assembly Foundation yearly and was member of that assembly. And even he was in the High Council of that assembly. So beside that, he was not forgetting the issues of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And he had some worries regarding the Shia communities over there. Before moving to Europe, he had some consideration regarding this, and that's why he was amongst the people who founded the Revolutionary Council of Islamic Unity of Afghanistan.
Very good.
And tried to defend the rights of Afghan Shia people over there.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Sheikh Mahtavi, do you have any other details about Muhammad Hakim Samadi? We got about 2 minutes.
Yeah, alhamdulillah, in a short visit that I had in Norway, we had this tawfiq to go there and visit and give a short visit to Sheikh Muhammad Hakim Samadi. And I remember that moment. He was really a good-natured man. Before knowing us, he started saying some of the memories about the time that he was preaching and about his confrontation with non-Muslims.
Okay.
And trying to prove Islam right in short discussions that he had with some of the priests over there.
That's right.
So alhamdulillah, even that short visit that we had with this noble man, I have a good memories from that visit.
I think what is important is that the people and the coming generations, I mean the next generations, who are interested in preaching Islam in international things, can benefit very much from the experiences of figures like Muhammad Hakim Samadi. And I think this is really important. I mean, being the true source of information and experience, and the coming generations can benefit from that. Aban 29, 1399, according to the solar calendar, Sheikh Muhammad Hakim Samadi passed away in Norway and was buried in the Muslim graveyards in Oslo, in Norway, over there. May Allah bless his soul, and may Allah protect all the Islamic preachers and Muslim preachers all across the world. Thank you very much, Sheikh Mahtavi and Sheikh Ziyania.
You're most welcome.
You're most welcome.
For your presence in the program, The Teacher, and thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Also, you can visit our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode and introducing another Shiite dignitary, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
We once had a teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures. Oh Allah, we've shamed ourselves, we've strayed from Al-Mu'allim. Surely we've wronged ourselves, what will we say in front of Al-Mu'allim?
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters, 7300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.